From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Alabama voters pushed Democrat Doug Jones into victory on Tuesday night in a special election for Jeff Sessions' vacated Senate seat. Jones beat radical right-winger Roy Moore, who has faced numerous credible accusations of being a pedophile, but he only beat him by a few percentage points. While a majority of white voters picked Moore, nearly all black voters picked Jones. Alabamans have not elected a Democratic senator for at least 25 years, and Tuesday's election now puts into play control of the U.S. Senate ahead of next year's midterms. So critical was this election that Republicans may have a harder time passing their ambitious tax reform bill into law. President Trump, who had defied his own party, especially congressional Republican leaders, openly backed Moore ahead of the race. But on Tuesday night, Trump grudgingly tweeted, "Congratulations to Doug Jones on a hard-fought victory, but a win is a win." My guest is Pema Levy. She is a reporter in Mother Jones's D.C. bureau. She's been covering the race in Alabama. Welcome to the program, Pema.
Thanks for having me.
So if Moore had won this election, there would be a number of discussions among particularly progressives about whether voter ID laws played a role in Alabama on Tuesday night. But you've been covering the issue of how voting restrictions have targeted in particular voters of color. As far as you know, did massive voter turnout, especially among black residents of Alabama, overcome any difficulties that that particular demographic might have had in voting because of voter ID laws?
Yeah, I think what you saw on Tuesday is that basically there was a huge Democratic wave, and that was in large part because black voters went to the polls in really large numbers. That doesn't mean that people didn't run into trouble with the voter ID law or with other issues in casting a ballot. There has been anecdotal evidence that that was the case. We have seen, for example, issues where people were allowed to use mugshots as their ID, but I'm sure that not everyone was allowed to do that if they needed to do that. So I definitely think that, you know, the outpouring from the black community in this election did overwhelm the impediments that are in place, but that doesn't mean that those impediments aren't real and that they aren't a problem going forward.
And in fact, going forward, because the margin of the vote tallies between the two candidates was so thin in future elections, that will prove to be a problem. It's never popular to talk about voter ID laws between elections, just right before elections. So I want to stay on that for a minute. What did Republicans who control the state legislature in Alabama do to make it harder specifically for African Americans to vote?
So the state has done a number of things in recent years. One of the things that they've done, and this is a little bit less direct, but they basically changed campaign finance laws to make it harder for groups that organize African-American voters to get the funding that they need. And they did this in, you know, saying it was for transparency and, you know, to stop corruption and such. But the effect it had was that it cut off funds to groups that for decades in the state have mobilized black voters. They passed this voter ID law, as you mentioned. African-American voters and Latino voters are less likely to have the IDs they need and less likely to have access to them when they need them. Alabama famously, a few years after passing its voter ID law, then decided that it was going to shut down DMVs across the state, and those closures would mean that African-American majority counties, many of them would just not have a DMV anymore. And that decision was partly overturned through an agreement with the federal government, which launched a civil rights investigation. But, you know, that did not look good for Alabama. And you can look at that and say, on the one hand, they're pushing voter ID, and on the other hand, they're taking away people's ability to get that ID. And that's a bad look for the state. And I don't think you can say that it hasn't had an effect on people.
So it's possible that Doug Jones's margin of victory might have been slightly bigger had there been no problems, because there were voting problems, as you write in Mother Jones, reports of voter suppression tactics pouring in. What happened to certain black voters who found that all of a sudden they couldn't vote? Their voting, their registration was made inactive. Some were basically told to file provisional votes.
Yeah, there is anecdotal evidence coming into civil rights groups as well as over social media that people arrived at the polls, you know, frequent voters, and they were told that they were inactive. What likely happened is that the Secretary of State's office sent out a mailing earlier this year to all registered voters, and what I believe was probably the case based on the law and what has happened is that some people's mailings were returned to the Secretary of State as undeliverable, and as a result, those people were put on an inactive voter list. And when you're put on an inactive voter list, you have to fill out additional forms. Now, even if you don't complete those forms, you should be able to cast a ballot, but it appears anecdotally that that was not the case, that some people were told that they could not cast ballots or they were forced to cast provisional ballots. That, based on what we know of the situation, appears to violate federal law. And again, the idea that you're all of a sudden an inactive voter because you didn't return a mailing is a really tricky situation. A lot of people, you know, use PO boxes, but they might not have paid the latest fee. A lot of people might have just moved. You know, a lot of people might use a different address for their mail than where they're living. Maybe they're students. So there's a lot of reasons why legitimate voters would not necessarily get a mailing. And to all of a sudden be put on this inactive voter list is, you know, clearly was a problem for at least a few people.
So despite this, Doug Jones went into a victory. Let's take a look at some of the racial demographics of voters and who they chose, because it is a very remarkable polarization between white voters and black voters, which are the two main groups, racial groups in Alabama. It's a state with very small percentages of Latino voters, but what we're seeing, and even Asian voters, what we're seeing is that 72% of white men and 63% of white women in Alabama voters picked Roy Moore, a person who's basically had several credible accusations of being a pedophile, over Doug Jones. And where black voters were concerned, 93% of black men and 98% of black women picked Doug Jones. 98% of black women, that number has led a lot of folks to say black women saved the country from an Alabama pedophile as senator. What do you make of these demographics?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what this shows is something that we already knew, which is that the South is incredibly polarized along racial lines when it comes to politics, and that it's going to take a lot to break that down. And a candidate, even one as flawed as Roy Moore, is not enough to bring more white voters over into the Democratic camp. And I mean, this is more white voters voting for a Democrat than they did in the 2016 election in Alabama.
Right, 27% of white men and 35% of white women did vote for Doug Jones.
Right. And so that is definitely an improvement over, you know, Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton a year ago. But it's still numbers that really show that there's a racial tribalism going on in politics in the South. And it's something that's, I think, you know, beyond, you know, the partisan outcomes here, this is something that's dangerous for our country. You don't want to see a politics where everything is so polarized racially. It's just not good for the country to have that going on, and it is a problem, and it's enduring.
So Donald Trump, who had very strongly backed Roy Moore in the last few weeks in particular, grudgingly, as I mentioned, congratulated Doug Jones. He said something interesting, though. He said, congratulations to Doug Jones on a hard-fought victory. The write-in votes played a very big factor, but a win is a win. What does he mean by the write-in votes?
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting way of viewing it, and it's not one that I really agree with. The last I checked, about 1.7% of the votes on Tuesday were for write-in candidate, were written, the voters wrote in a name, I should say. And that it was a slightly larger than Doug Jones' margin of victory. And I guess the idea that Donald Trump is putting out there is that a lot of Republicans wrote in someone other than Roy Moore, and that that cost him the election. I would quibble with that a little bit. I think what cost Roy Moore the election is that a lot of voters simply sat out the race. A lot of Republican voters, you know, their turnout was way down compared to 2016. They clearly were not energized. I'm sure a lot of people did not want to cast a vote for Roy Moore, and they simply did not go to the polls. I think ultimately—
So who did they write in? I mean, like, you know, if they didn't vote for either Roy Moore or Doug Jones, was there a write-in candidate running?
There actually was, and I have to say he got so little coverage that I don't remember his name at the moment. But I will say, and this is just sort of a quirk of elections, a lot of times people get confused and they write in the name of one of the candidates. So I would not be surprised if a portion of those write-ins are actually just votes for Roy Moore or Doug Jones. Hmm. And so I don't know if write-in candidates will actually make the difference here. But again, I think the real thing that hurt more is that that his voters just stayed home.
The other tweet by Trump just ahead of the election said, "The people of Alabama will do the right things." He said, "Doug Jones is pro-abortion, weak on crime, military and legal immigration, bad for gun owners and veterans and against the wall. Jones is a Pelosi slash Schumer puppet. Roy Moore will always vote with us. Vote Roy Moore." It was just an interesting thought, because he first blamed Doug Jones of being a puppet of establishment Democrats, but then literally stated that Roy Moore would be a reliable puppet of the Republican Party.
Yeah, you know, I think that tweet exemplifies a strategy that Republicans have had for, you know, basically since 2008 that has been honestly very effective for them, which is to nationalize a race, bring in unpopular figures like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, before that it was Harry Reid or President Obama, and say, you know, these people, you know, these Dems aren't going to be working for you. They're just going to be puppets of these national Democrats you don't like. But clearly that wasn't enough at this point. Doug Jones did a really good job of keeping the race local, not getting drawn into national politics. And so, you know, despite Trump's effort to sort of turn this into a national a race and a referendum on national Democratic policies, I think Jones was largely able to avoid that label, and it helped him.
This is Doug Jones's claim to fame is that he prosecuted the KKK over the 1963 church bombing that killed four little black girls. But he has, since then, at least during this election, his politics aren't necessarily in the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, are they? I understand that he, whether in an effort to win over Republican voters or simply being a white Alabaman, is not necessarily someone that we would consider nationally as a progressive Democrat, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a question, of course, of how you define progressive and, you know, what sort of boxes you have to check in order to meet that label. And I don't know that, you know, there is a standard label there. I think that, Donald Trump was right, for example. Doug Jones ran in Alabama as a pro-choice Democrat, and that was a big deal for Alabama, and he won. I think on other issues, he was more sort of down the road. He's talking a lot about compromising, about getting things done, about bringing both sides together. And, you know, certainly if you're running in a red state, to run as, the most liberal you could be, I think that would be difficult. But I also think that Doug Jones did not shy away from things that could be unpopular. He made a point of talking about voting rights. That was, you know, prominently on his website. He was talking about voter suppression. And so, you know, I think you can sort of pick and choose. I think he probably wouldn't describe himself as a progressive, so I don't know that I should either. But I don't think that he, you know, you had, you know, the Blue Dog era not too long ago of Democrats who were really quite conservative on many issues, who were pro-life, who were fiscally very conservative, and I don't think you can put Doug Jones in that camp either, at least. thus far.
Now, let's also talk about how the Democratic Party, the National Committee in particular, has treated this race and treated races in red states in general. It wasn't until the Roy Moore scandal around his sexual predatory behavior came to light that Democrats really began putting an effort into running a strong race for Doug Jones. And in many ways, it seems that Democrats have written off, especially Senate and House races from red states, which has left candidates in those states, you know, without the support of the National Committee, which has then led to less voter turnout, which has basically become a vicious cycle. And we've just accepted that states like Alabama will have only Republican senators until now. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think that there's sort of this back and forth in politics for years now, especially among Democrats, about whether or not you should focus your resources on the most winnable elections or whether or not you should have what Howard Dean called his 50-state strategy when he was the DNC chair. And the idea was, you know, you need this energy everywhere. You never know when an opportunity is going to come along. You need voters energized all around the country.
And Republicans do that. They fight tooth and nail at every level of politics.
Yeah, they have been really good, especially at the local level recently. Yeah. So I do think that, you know, Democrats probably look at this as another example for why they need that 50-state strategy. You know, and again, they have to be careful. You know, if the DNC in a conservative state like Alabama doesn't want to make a big deal of the fact that they're helping, because then it becomes a referendum on the DNC and national Democrats, as we were chatting about earlier. So I do think that it's a tricky dance for them. They want to be sending resources there, but they don't want to be advertising it. For example, a super PAC that was helping out Doug Jones adopted the name Highway 31. Which is a local reference, even though it was funded largely, it's my understanding, through national Democratic groups. But the idea was you don't want to advertise to people that you're there because then they won't trust you as much. You need that local name to get you the credibility. So I do think it's a tricky dance. But, you know, we have a DNC under a relatively new chairman now, Tom Perez. And so I think, you know, it's possible we're seeing a changing of strategy there.
Well, let's see, because time and again, establishment Democrats seem to shoot themselves in the foot. Charles Barkley, celebrity athlete from Alabama, who had been campaigning for Doug Jones, made a very important point after the election or in the last few hours of the election. He said meaning the Democratic Party, has taken the black vote and the poor vote for granted for a long time. They've always had our votes and they've abused our votes. And this is a wake-up call. We're in a great position now, but this is a wake-up call for Democrats to do better for black people and poor white people. And I think this is an important point because you've had Democrats, you know, run races around the country, even at the presidential level, as Hillary Clinton's race showed, along sort of using identity politics to get votes, but not actually promoting policies that do benefit the poorest, most vulnerable Americans, people of color in particular. They sort of, you know, take them for granted. What do you make of Charles Barkley's challenge to the Democrats?
Yeah, I think that's an issue that everyone's talking about today, and I think it's going to be really important for Democrats to examine that. And I think beyond messaging, which is important, which you just said, there's, again, the question of allocation of resources. Do you put your resources into ads that will appeal to white suburbanites that you think might vote Democrat, or do you put the money into a ground game that will reach African-American voters and other voters of color? And I think it's quite possible that the Democrats have in the past hurt themselves by putting too much money into winning over white conservatives who, rather than, you know, firing up their base. And I think that, yeah, there could easily be a recalculation after this.
Now, Republicans who need every vote in the Senate that they can possibly have in order to pass major pieces of legislation, including the reconciliation bill from the tax reform rewrite that they're pushing, they will now have a 51-49 majority. That means they can't afford to lose a single vote. And now we're hearing that the Senate Republicans are unbelievably refusing to see Doug Jones before they have their final vote on the tax reform bill. What do you make of this? I mean, it just seems as though when Republicans can't get any lower in terms of simply playing by agreed upon rules, they do manage to get lower.
Well, I mean, you had Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, in 2016 hold a Supreme Court seat vacant for a year, basically,
Exactly.
they could get their guy in. So I don't think that it's surprising. I think in
And
terms of
let's actually just for that for a minute, just state that clearly. So Barack Obama had the right as president to name a Supreme Court justice when Antonin Scalia died, and the Republicans and Mitch McConnell forced, the Democrats and Obama to not name a Supreme Court justice, saying that it should be the next president's right to do so. Now they're literally doing exactly the opposite.
yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of liberals who feel like that Supreme Court seat was stolen, and I think that they really they have a point there. It sat vacant for an entire year. I think when you get to the tax reform issue here, there is Republicans simply do have leeway because Alabama has to certify their election, and I think, we're in the middle of the holidays, and so it could be that if they can turn that reform bill around really quickly, that Doug Jones simply wouldn't make it there in time. But ultimately, if they don't pass their tax bill in a few weeks, then it will start to look like they are keeping someone out of the Senate in order to get legislation through. And I can't imagine that's popular to do. And I think that that could certainly cause an uproar if that turns out to be the case.
Right. And so we'll see, because Republicans are already saying on Wednesday that they have a deal to push the tax bill through. There was one senator who did not vote for the Senate version of the bill, Bob Corker. It's possible they've written in an amendment to please him, basically giving into special interests like they always accuse Democrats of doing, just in order to win one vote here and there. It'll be really interesting to see that the tax code of the entire country, which was so hastily pushed forward, now hinges on exactly what the Republicans feel they can get away with. And we're talking about, a tax code that all individuals and corporations depend on being written into law for the foreseeable future. I want to ask you, Pema, whether you think what happened in Alabama has a bearing, or what you think the bearing is on next year's midterm elections, because this is a critical issue. Democrats need every Senate seat they can get, and every House seat too. And next year's 2018 midterm elections are going to be a test of what Trump will manage to get done or not, and what the Republicans will manage to get done or not. Many are saying the Alabama race was a bellwether for Democrats retaking at least the Senate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that before Doug Jones won, and everyone assumed that Alabama would send a Republican to the Senate, that basically the chances of Democrats taking the Senate in 2018 were low. I now think that it's probably about a toss-up. If Democrats, they have to defend some tough seats in 2018. They have to defend Indiana, North Dakota, Missouri, West Virginia, these seats that, in states that went for Trump. But now that they have Alabama, I think that, the chances of them are much better for taking the Senate. So that is a very big deal. And I think that, more broadly, the energy that you saw on the Democratic side in Alabama, and frankly, the lack of energy that you saw on the Republican side, is definitely a bad omen for Republicans going forward, and speaks to what is looking like a Democratic wave in 2018.
Still, the fact that Roy Moore won, in as many votes as he did, the fact that there wasn't a larger margin of victory by Doug Jones in the Alabama election reminds me of what happened in the presidential race last year, that at least in certain states where Trump managed to scrape by a victory. I feel like the Alabama race was a sort of replay at the state level of the national election that took place last year, that you had the worst possible candidate that the Republicans could run against a sort of, moderate Democrat. And it should have been no contest. But Democrats still, last year, of course, lost. but narrowly, and in Alabama won but narrowly, right? I mean, these margins of victory should be much higher, but they are not.
Yeah, I definitely felt a lot of deja vu between this race and 2016. I mean, I think, one thing that you did not mention was the fact that both of Trump and Moore had these, for lack of sex scandals, the wrong word. They had allegations of sexual misconduct, of assault coming at them. They had Republicans sort of fleeing, saying we don't want to support him anymore, and then ultimately coming back before the election and saying, you know what, actually, it's worth it. We
Right,
don't really.
and you're talking about Republican leaders, party leaders, who did initially say they weren't going to back Roy Moore, but then at the last minute, kind of cave and keel over and do so.
Absolutely. And when Republican leaders come back and support a candidate, it signals to their voters, this is the right choice. It's okay to go ahead and support this person. This is better for the country. We have to do this. And they did that with Donald Trump, and I believe that that helped him win last year. And they did it again with Roy Moore. So it definitely felt like there was some deja vu there. But ultimately, it wasn't quite enough in this case. But as you said, it is, he did come very close to reaching the Senate.
Pema, is the best place to read your writings at Mother Jones's website?
It is.
That's motherjones.com. We'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Pema Levy. She's a reporter in Mother Jones's DC bureau. She's been covering the race for the Senate seat in Alabama. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.